53 Main Street Gallery presents Hidden Gardens, an exhibition of works by the artists of Ad Hoc Projects, a collective of 13 artists striving to bring challenging and provocative diverse works to the Catskills. On view through March 20th. Information about the gallery and upcoming exhibitions at 1053maingallery.com. The Ark Bowl and Barbecue, Route 28 in Arkville, New York. A 120-seat, restored 1960s-era vintage 8-lane bowling alley, barbecue joint, saloon, and music entertainment venue. Featuring a slow, smoked and grilled barbecue menu. The Ark Bowl and Barbecue, available for all types of social events, including weddings, birthday parties, and work gatherings. Details at thearkbowl.com.
Hi, this is Arnie Schwartz, host of Talk of the Town on WIOX Roxbury. I'm also board chair at Margaville Hospital. I have some important news about new jobs at Margaville Hospital and Mountainside Residential Care Center. The hospital and the residential care center have an immediate need for experienced and newly graduated registered nurses, LPNs, and certified nursing assistants. New positions are now open, offering competitive salary and benefit packages and significant sign-on and retention bonuses. Learn more at jobs@hahv.org. jobs@hahv.org.
You're listening to WIOX Community Radio, live and local in the Catskill Mountains at 91.3 FM, MTC Cable TV Channel 20 on the campus of SUNY Delhi at 107.5 FM, worldwide at WIOXradio.org, and on any mobile device radio FM app. And this is From the Forest, every Wednesday, 6 to 7 p.m., talk about a different forest-related topic with Ryan and John. John, how's it going?
Things are good, Ryan. How are you?
I'm all right. What have you been up to?
Oh, I was in Georgia last weekend.
Yeah, how was that?
Georgia was good. Georgia, I didn't get to spend a lot of time down there and just flew down for a wedding and flew back. But I did manage to go for a hike one day. I was pleased to see we were in the North Georgia Mountains region, so in the northwestern corner, the southern Appalachian spline, and very similar to parts of the Catskills, to be honest with you. I mean, yeah, there's different tree species, but a lot of oak, a lot of hickory, a little bit of red maple and yellow birch coming up in the understory.
Get out of town.
Oh, boy.
With all that global warming?
All these things that we talk about these last couple months, I saw it firsthand, and it was a good experience to go down and actually see it firsthand. But, yeah, I hiked up a mountain. Valley bottoms were about 1,000 feet, mountaintops 3,200 or so. So very, very similar to around here.
Yeah, when you look at the dendrology maps, a lot of these species that are found here in the north follow that spine on the southern, you know, into the Appalachians.
Yeah, and that's what I found. I mean, a lot of chestnut oak, a lot of red oak, a lot of white oak.
How much red maple's coming up?
Not much. But, I had to look. I had to look for it. Yeah. And if you weren't looking, you wouldn't have saw it. I saw one in the overstory that was probably a 14-inch tree.
Any sugar maple?
None that I saw.
Sucks.
Yeah.
I hate that. You got to have some sugar maple.
Yeah, and then around here, apple volunteer growth in old pasture settings that are being abandoned.
Huh.
There was pear.
How the apples look?
I didn't see many apples. There's a few on people's yards.
Yeah.
They were okay. But I did see a peach tree that was growing like a volunteer apple does around here.
Right.
Kind of at the hedgerow, reaching out, grabbing sunlight. Peaches here couldn't even survive that.
No.
They need a lot more sun here.
Pears do well there?
Pears were, they're volunteers everywhere.
Huh.
Just like we see like in central Delaware County around here, apples coming in.
Yeah, if I moved down south, I would definitely miss sugar maple.
Yeah.
You know?
Tulip trees was like ash here.
That's a cool tree.
Yeah, they were everywhere. Anywhere they can sprout up, they were there.
Yeah, that's probably like their red maple, I would imagine.
Yeah, probably.
You know?
Yeah.
Yeah, they seem like that Cove hardwood forest, you know, if it's well drained. Or their sugar maple, maybe even. I don't know. Yellow poplar needs good sight.
Right.
At least where it grows here in the Catskills, you know. There's one place where I know where it grows in the upper Bushkill in West Shokan. And tall, man.
Mm-hmm.
One of the tallest, straightest trees there are.
Yep.
Hell yeah. My fourth kid is named Magnolia, and it's not really. I didn't name her really after the Magnolia tree. She's really named after a yellow poplar, which is in the Magnoliaceae family.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
But I couldn't fit a Magnolia or a yellow poplar in my property. I mean, I could fit it, but it would just take over the site.
Yeah.
So right. I couldn't really justify it, but I did plant a magnolia tree, so they're a pretty cool tree too.
Yeah. Very pretty flowers. Pink, right?
Yeah. Well, they come in all different varieties, you know, cultivars. But tonight we're talking about backyard maple sugaring. And we got to talk about, you know, once a year, that's for sure.
Sure.
And it's been slow out there. I should have sap tonight. I've only had one mega run so far. A mega run is like 2 gallons a tap of sap in a day, right? So if you have 15 taps, you get 30 gallons of sap. That's pretty good.
Yeah, that's really good.
Yeah, I only had one of those. But, and that's saying something, because we've had some pretty warm days, actually. There was some days in the 50s. One day it even hit 60, 61 degrees.
And you didn't get 2 gallons per tap on that day?
That day I hardly got anything, man. I mean, it's always Wednesdays when I get a lot of sap, because that's the way the gods are doing, swinging me. Like today. I'm sure I got a lot of sap, because I get home late, and they're like, this is how we'll get them.
Right.
You'll be up late.
Up all night.
Yeah. But, so we had a Wednesday evening that I had a lot of sap, but it was really warm and it didn't freeze the night before, you know, it's to be expected. But I think the ground has just been so cold. I don't remember there being, you know, dry conditions before the winter, but that could be. And people say, well, we didn't get, you know, that much snow. It's true, but you know what? I've had great years where we had no snow. Like, so I don't think that matters.
Right. I don't think it was a dry fall.
I don't think it was either.
I remember getting wet, like really wet, hunting. So that means it had to have been wet. I mean, I hunt a lot, and I remember being wet a lot.
Yeah.
This last season.
Some of the maple trees had anthracnose, where they lost their leaves prematurely in midsummer.
Yep.
From too much rain in the spring, and they get leaf fungi, and they dropped. But that didn't happen everywhere. But that would be more impacting of the sugar content, because right now they're photosynthesizing less, making less sugar. That's not going to affect sap, which is totally dictated by temperature.
So could it be that, I mean, it was a really pretty cold winter this winter, and not a ton of snow. We had snow for most of it, but not deep.
Yeah.
Maybe the initial frost went pretty deep in the ground, and it's taken them a little longer to wake up.
That's got to be it.
I would think so.
Yeah. I mean, I remember one year, maybe, I don't know, the late aughts, somewhere in 2010 or 11, maybe. Actually, those early, no, not the aughts. And I remember Ben Snyder, who's the former forester or natural resources manager at Frost Valley, he was convinced that there wasn't that much water in the ground, and they just ran out of water.
Right.
So the sap, and he claimed he had it documented. So I could believe that, but I just don't think the ground was dry going into winter.
Right. So it's got to be moisture still locked up.
Yeah, it must be. And then we had some cold days. It was a cold winter.
Yeah.
You know, and not much snow to insulate it. So we only had two snowstorms.
I know, and two that were more than 6 inches.
Doesn't seem to mean no snow days, at least where my kids go to school. Flake falls from the sky, and they're done. You know, they're out. But we've only had, let me repeat this, we only had two storms. But whatever, I digress.
Well, I didn't tap until Monday, so I can't really speak for those warmer days because they were occurring while I was down in Georgia, so I wasn't going to tap my trees and not tend to them. So
yeah,
I missed that, so I can't add to the conversation, but I assume, I mean, I'm in central Delaware County, my trees. If yours didn't run, mine probably wouldn't have run either.
No.
Definitely not. So
definitely not.
I think I'm timing it for Delaware County's first run, which should be coming up this weekend. Weather's looking good.
Yeah.
So,
right.
Yeah. So, what are we looking for those runs?
To me, the best temperatures for maple sugaring is highs in the 40s, mid to lower 40s, and lows in the mid 20s.
Yeah.
Yeah. Why? Because from my experience, I mean, I'm a bucket guy, meaning I'm just a backyard sugaring person who uses buckets. I don't use lines, and I don't use, vacuum.
Yep.
That kind of stuff, it's more sealed, the hole, so they'll get runs on days when bucket people won't. Why? Because buckets are more exposed to the wind, and they shut down faster.
Right.
That matters. Wind matters. You think it doesn't. I remember I heard that from older people, and I thought it was ridiculous, but it's not at all. You get a south or southwest wind, and the trees will be less likely to run.
Yeah. Yeah, and my experience running tubing for a commercial operation once, we had a vacuum house set on a electric or on a thermometer switch, right? So it would turn on at 32 degrees, but it wouldn't turn off until 28 degrees.
Yeah, it's crazy.
So it's been frozen. Buckets would have been done for a long time, but we let that pump run until we were sure that those lines were frozen.
Well, you'll see sap falling out of the spout, and it will be frozen on a bucket system.
Right.
But I love buckets. I get to know each tree very well. But if it gets up in the 50s, you're going to get sap. It's just that the quality will go down, right? Because sap starts to slightly ferment. Microorganisms start building up. Ants start building up.
Moths.
yeah. And these things, I just think they're not bad. I mean, everything gets filtered and then boiled at 220 degrees. So it's going to be fine. Don't worry about eating bugs. Everything gets pasteurized in the end. But it's just the quality goes down as far as, you know, now you're only going to make dark syrup. Not that dark syrup is bad. It's just that that's all you're going to make now.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas the 40s, it's perfect. You know, it's going to run very well, and the quality is going to – the sap's going to stay fresh. So you should boil every day if you can. You shouldn't let it sit overnight.
Right. So when it's, you know, sitting in a refrigerator outside, it's good to go.
It's good to go. Someone asked me if – someone told me they bought unpasteurized syrup. That's not a thing.
Yeah.
Everything is pasteurized, meaning it's boiled at a very high temperature. You can't make syrup without boiling. I think there was even a study they did years ago where they tried filtering it through reverse osmosis over and over again. It just actually, the cooking process is what makes maple syrup. Even if you concentrated the sugar to 67%, which is what maple syrup is, in New York it's 66.6%. Vermont, it's 67 because they're special. It would still not be maple syrup. You actually have to cook it.
Yeah, right. They've tried freeze concentrating sap too, or freeze it every night, take out the water, frozen ice.
Oh yeah.
Yeah, same thing. You have to provide the heat.
Yeah.
For those polypeptides and minerals and enzymes in that sap to, you know, create that flavor.
this grading system, they changed it, do you remember, a number of years ago?
Five-ish, maybe?
Yeah. Before then, it was light, medium, and dark amber, grade A. And then there was a grade B, and there was a grade, maybe even grade C.
There was, yeah.
Like chewing tobacco and stuff, yeah. Right?
Commercial grade, right?
Yeah. Now it's, I don't even know what it is. I don't really care. To be honest, I'm a backyard person, and as long as it's, as my friend used to call it, rosé, I'm pretty good to go. And, yeah, that's fine with me. It's an amberish kind of color, yeah. Where I can see through it. That's my favorite. Not where you can't see through it. Not so light where it's like, looks like honey.
You can read a dollar bill through the other side.
It looks like Jack Daniels. That's my grading system.
Okay.
Things that color are great. Whiskey and maple syrup. When they look very similar to me, that's the best tasting maple syrup.
I agree with you. I like that. I like that.
Yeah.
You know, some people only want dark syrup, and that's fine, but it's strong.
It can be too dark.
Yeah, it could be too dark.
Yeah, I think so.
It's got a little bite to it, right?
Yeah. I also don't like fresh syrup. It's just kind of weird.
Hot syrup, you mean?
Well, I don't know. Something happens when you put it in the can for a year. Maybe some kind of fermentation. I have no idea. But it almost tastes tangy. When you first make maple syrup.
Yeah.
And you have it, I don't know when, because I'm constantly, you know, eating syrup throughout the year, and it, you know, it's maybe sometimes a year old. It's just totally different. It's mellowed. It'll be taste like vanilla a little bit, but it's tangy, man, when you first have it.
Oh, man, yeah. I just opened a new jar this last week, and from last year, it was really good.
It's really good. It'll last, who knows, a long time, as long as you brought it up to the proper temperature. I always bring it up to at least 200 degrees if it cools down through the filtering process. So let me just say this before we take a break, but the only thing that you have to do if you're to sell syrup, as far as I remember New York State, legally, is that it has to be filtered.
Mm-hmm.
So obviously brought up to the temperature. Or a concentration of sugar.
Right. I think the minimum bottling temperature is 180.
180, right.
And then it also has to be filtered, yeah.
It has to be filtered, and you have to have your contact information on it.
Yep.
Other than that, syrup is pretty safe. That's why there's so few regulations on it. So if you're just tuning in, you're listening to From the Forest every Wednesday, 6 to 7 p.m. with Ryan and John. Tonight's topic is backyard maple sugaring.
We'll be right back.
All right. That's Led Zeppelin. Over the hills and far away. And what these hills have in the Catskills is sugar maple. Where we're sitting here in Roxbury, Delaware County, is pretty much the seat of sugar maple, man.
Yeah.
You know?
Doesn't take long to find one.
Not at all. And the reason why is they like calcium-rich soils that are well-drained. Never mind the rocks. They don't care about that. Tree roots go around those rocks. And it's perfect here for sugar maple.
Right.
Okay. Delaware County has the most potential taps in New York State. New York State has the most in the world. It's a true story.
Yeah, that comes from Forest Service FIA data, right?
I don't know.
I think so.
I think so.
I just read it, actually.
Yeah.
I gave a presentation on this last weekend.
Cornell's been repeating that as well for a long time, and I have no reason to believe it's not true after driving around these mountains. And, you know, it's portions of Ulster as you get into the higher elevations, the same thing. Portions of Sullivan as you get into the higher elevations. Green County's
loaded.
Is loaded. It's till, you know, at least the Catskill half is until you get into the Hudson Valley side.
Mm-hmm.
Although the Hudson Valley's starting to grow some sugar maple in places. But, yeah, so this is a good spot to do it. If you're a backyard maple person, you're going to want to look for sugar maple. And to describe this tree from, or to decipher it from red maple, is not an easy task. But right now, it is not too bad. The red maple have bursting red buds.
Right. Yeah. You can look up, especially if there's two trees side by side where one's a sugar and one's a red, you're going to see it right away. But it's got a very swollen reddish tinge to it. That's why when you drive down the hillside or drive down the roads and look at the hillsides, they have a reddish glow.
Absolutely. Red maple can tolerate dry sites and wet sites. So if you live in a swampy area, you're probably going to have red maple. If you're up there in the Adirondacks and it's really wet, you might have silver maple. That tolerates even wetter sites. This is why we have superior sugar maple down here. It's because we don't have those marshy muskrat lands. We have well-drained mountainsides.
Right.
So we just don't have that. There's no canoeing in the Catskills in any significant way.
Right.
Up there, you can have a canoe and go everywhere and have some fun. We don't have that. But, you know, we have good trout streams and sugar maple.
Right.
So, maple syrup is great. It's on everything, man. Have you tried putting it on your breakfast sandwich yet?
Yes.
It's amazing.
I have actually this past weekend did that.
Yeah.
It's really good.
Who are these people that says it's only good for pancakes? You know, I don't like them.
I don't really like smothered. I don't like food sitting in liquid.
Yeah. Plus, I don't need to eat all these carbs.
Right.
You know?
Yeah, right.
Like just a huge stack of pancakes with just maple syrup smothered all over. I don't know.
Yeah, sugar and carbs.
I'm not doing it. So, no. Breakfast sandwich, it goes well with sausage. Just a little bit. You can use it in place of salt. Just a little bit. You don't need that much with maple syrup.
Right.
It's the beauty of it.
It can go on meat. It can go on salad dressings. It can go on
popcorn.
Popcorn. There you go.
Fish. Especially fish.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. It's really good. Any vegetable. Doesn't matter.
Yeah. I mean, everybody puts brown sugar on fish.
Yeah.
Put maple syrup.
That's right. Just put it at the end. If you put it too early, it'll burn. Right? When it's in the oven.
Mm-hmm.
Last 5 minutes or so. Tree selection, like we said, sugar maple is what you're going for. For people who have reverse osmosis machines that concentrates the sap, they don't really care. They could use red maple. You know, most of Canada, they're tapping red maple
because
they have terrible sight compared to us down here in the Catskills.
Right.
All right?
Right. And tubing, I mean, for the big commercial guys, the tubing, last I checked, was over 10 cents a linear foot. Plus, getting it to the tree is another $1 to $1.50 per tap. So, I mean, running the tubing through the woods is the costly part. So if you're going to run buy a red maple to get to a sugar maple, you might as well tap it.
Yeah.
It's going to produce something for you.
If you're tapping like it's 1899, you need to tap trees with the biggest crowns.
Hmm.
All right? Why is that? The bigger the crown or live foliage that it had in the summer, that translates into higher sugar contents. I remember talking to this old guy. I was tapping trees in Dunraven. He comes over and he's like, they don't run like they used to. And he's not wrong, but he's not exactly right either, in my opinion. The reason why I don't think he's totally wrong is because back in the day, before the 1960s or 70s or really 80s, Not just tubing is great for sap, but now that you have reverse osmosis, they're tapping any maple tree because you can put that sap through that filter and boost it to 8%, right?
Mm-hmm.
Well, back before reverse osmosis, first of all, you would never tap a tree that can produce a saw log because that tree is, one, valuable for a saw log.
Right. It's worth a lot more as a saw log than it will ever be producing,
right.
Producing syrup in the woods.
Yeah. And the second reason is those trees don't have the biggest crown. So a tree that's competing for sunlight, it's going to be 2% tops, 40 to 1. Tops, they're really 50 to 1 in the woods.
Mm-hmm.
That's what in Frost Valley, they're always 50 to 1, it seemed. But in a true sugar bush from 1899 or the 1800s, 2.5%. Absolutely. 33 to 1 is not uncommon. My trees that I tap on this hillside that are kind of like trees that people would tap in the 1800s, it's in a horse pasture, they're sometimes 3%. That's, what is that, 27 to 1?
Yes, it is.
I think it's 27 to 1.
I think you're right.
But they're typically 2.5%. That's what all I've been getting lately is 2.5%. That's 33 to 1. That's a huge difference between 40 or 50 to 1.
Right.
So... yeah.
Well, I mean, even average, like red maple is going to peak out an average like 1.5, maybe 1.7.
Yeah.
Sugar maple is maybe 2% on most trees. But once you get in those open pastures, you know, you get much better result.
Absolutely. So if you're a backyarder, tap sugar maple. They typically have higher sugar contents. I know Cornell was saying maybe not. I doubt that. I know from my experience keeping records, I always found sugar maple has higher sugar content.
And oh, you're talking about that article we read recently?
Yeah.
I didn't agree with that. If anybody's read that article, it just came out. A little preliminary data of a very short analysis. It wasn't big enough to be a big scientific study or anything. But, yeah, they were saying the red maple could be very similar in its lifetime as sugar maple in a sugar bush. But no way.
I don't think so.
Greatly disagree with that. One, because of the sugar content, even if you're putting it through an RO. Two, it doesn't run in as long of a season.
Because you used to tap them.
I used to tap them. Used to tap a sugar bush with 73% red maple. How do I know? Because I counted. 800 trees.
Right.
Counted them all one day. And, comparatively, I mean, the sugar maple would still be running 1 to 1.5, 2 weeks later than the reds. I mean,
yeah.
They're done. They won't even spit out another drop, and they're done.
I mean, as far as I know, when they start to, because red maples seem to bud out sooner, earlier.
Yeah.
And when that happens, it's, you know, the sucrose, right, is being converted to starch.
Yeah.
I would think that would change the quality a little bit, but I don't know. They claim maybe not. Who knows?
Well, that's what they're claiming, so we'll see. More data to come, maybe.
Yeah, there's so many factors, too. I mean, if you're using reverse osmosis along with it, maybe it doesn't matter. I don't know.
But the time, you know? I mean, there's less days available. And I don't think the volume was all that great, to be honest with you, compared to other sugar bushes I've worked in and experienced. I don't think they run as much per tap, gallons of sap per tap in a season.
Yeah, that makes sense to me. First thing you should do if you're thinking about boiling sap is thinking about your firewood, or as we call it more specifically, sapwood.
Mm-hmm.
And this is not like making a fire in your house where you want dense woods. You want the light wood trees. So depending on where you are, it's going to vary, you know. If you're up here in the mountains, you're probably left with aspen or poplar, as people call them up here. What else? What else do you burn? Hemlock?
This year I've got aspen, hemlock, a little bit of white pine, and some Norway spruce.
Norway spruce. Wow.
Yeah, it was down the road, free, neighbor cut it, didn't want it. And, hey, if it's free, I'll take it.
Yeah. Down by me is white pine. White pine's got gasoline, but you go through a lot of it fast. Aspen, sassafras, black walnut.
Ooh.
Yeah. Catalpa. What else? I'm missing one, I know it. Well, anyway, I can't think of it. Hemlock's good. I like hemlock.
Mm.
Yeah. And there's a lot dying, so.
Yeah.
There you go.
Easy to come by. Yeah, you don't want things like ash or maple or cherry. Why? They're going to not burn as hot or as fast. they're going to have that heating coal, right? That's what you want in your wood stove, right? You don't want to bake the house out. You want that lasting coal to produce the heat for hours. And then it does leave a coal behind, all those hardwoods. You don't want that. When you want to be done, you want to be done.
Yeah.
You know, if you boiled for 4, 5, 6 hours after work, it's time to go to bed. And then you got to deal with a fire. And when you're done, you don't want that.
You know, what I do is mine only does 5 to 8 gallons of sap per hour I boil. And I need 5 gallons to cool. So I load it up one last time. That'll boil away 5 gallons as it cools. And then right towards the end, I'll rake all the coals to the front. And ever since I do that, I literally throw out probably like 2 quarts of ashes the next day.
Mm-hmm.
Just, you know, it burns it all up so it's completely empty. And it works. So, I don't know.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I have a similar process. I have a 4-gallon preheater on the back. So when I am getting low, I fill that, you know, the last 4 gallons up in the preheater, load it up, and that's it. Sometimes I can see my ratios off. When I get good at the end of the season, I'll throw 1 or 2 more sticks on.
Yeah.
Keep it burning. Maybe pile those coals up and throw 1 or 2 sticks on, and they burn right out.
Yeah. That makes sense. Then tapping. Tapping is not too bad. You know, go a couple inches into the tree, slightly downhill with the drill. I use 5/16. I used to use 7/16, and then they came out with health spouts a number of years ago. You know, that hole heals up faster when you go smaller. There's a certain point where it's too small. Although I guess they have 3/16 now, right? Is that true?
Yeah, but I think that's mostly for vacuum only. Is that right?
Yeah.
I don't think gravity systems can do it because it'll plug up with bacteria too quick.
Yeah. The big thing is where you tap the next year. You know, people want to know how much you can tap a tree, sustainably.
Mm-hmm.
Well, you can tap them until they're dead. I wouldn't advise that, especially if it's not your trees, but any tree. I don't like over tapping a tree. So you tap about 2.5 inches horizontally and about 8 inches vertically with 5/16.
Getting away from last year's hole.
Yeah, from last year's hole. And the reason is it's only 2.5 horizontal is because rot doesn't really spread in a tree horizontally. It follows the sapwood, which runs vertically. So the vertical is more important.
Right.
Now, this is what people do. I think you get lazy and you only tap on the south side. Well, eventually, you're going to over-tap it, maybe.
Yeah.
You got to tap, you know, on all sides of the tree eventually, you know. The other thing I've started doing, and I swear by it, is if you're a backyarder and you have more trees than you can tap, one tap per tree, it works. I know it's counterintuitive, but you just don't get as much sap on that second tap. And I now have, it's not anecdotal anymore, I just have evidence of it, you know, going at maple sugaring now, it's my 15th year. But I also read a study in the 1950s when tapping was more important than it used to be. Now with reverse osmosis has changed everything, but they compared. Cornell compared a sugar bush where they did 2 taps versus one where it was 1 tap per tree and way more sap on the 1 tap per tree.
Yeah, I think the second tap only got like 15 or 18% more volume.
Yeah, I feel like they lost somewhere between 15 and 30% loss on the second tap.
Oh, yeah.
But I could be wrong.
Maybe it was lost.
Lost.
So, yeah.
Significant.
Well, if you're paying for, you know, if you're backyard and you're paying for these resources, you know, maybe this is your first year and you have to invest in buckets. You're going to pay an extra $5 to $8 per bucket for a 30% loss? No.
It might be more.
Probably more this year, yeah. You're going to put on a second tree and get that 50% gain out of it, right?
If you can find used buckets, I bet you it's $5 to $8, but new.
Yeah, you're right. I was thinking used prices.
They're crazy. Mm. They were crazy like 10 years ago, you know? Yeah, exactly. Less to clean up, less buckets. Since I've done that, I've gone down in the numbers of taps I do. And it gives you more options. Meaning next year when I go to tap, there's fewer holes that I have to stay away from the next year. So I don't know.
Yeah, no, I followed your method for like 4 years now and totally agree.
It does. You get the full power of the tree. There's only so much sap in that tree.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah, and definitely keep moving around the tree. If it's going to be your first year, pick a direction. I go counterclockwise, and I just know that. So every year when I find my old hole, I just move counterclockwise, and then eventually I'm going to go all the way around the tree. And even if it's uncomfortable, like this year, I tapped right over top. One tree landed right over top of a stone wall, and I have to climb on top of it to get my bucket.
That's what I'm doing. I'm four of them.
So it's going to be a pain, or you're experiencing it. It's a pain to go get a full bucket over top of a stone wall.
Yeah, but at least you can... I mean, at least you can lift up on it.
Yeah, but you have to do it for the tree's health, right?
Yeah.
And then eventually, 2 to 3 years from now, we're going to be past that and around the tree again. And
exactly.
No longer a problem.
Yeah, and, you know, if they're on the north-facing side, they'll run later in the season. And the south side will run earlier, but will shut off probably earlier in the season. That's fine. They always seem to run better on the south side, no matter what, you know.
Yeah, if it freezes cold at night, they'll thaw out a little quicker in the day.
Yeah. The other advantage of buckets is, one, education. You get to know each tree very well. You'll know who runs the best, and you can start remembering those trees and retap them the next year. The second thing is you can test them, their sugar content, and know which sweet trees are sweet and which aren't. And the third thing is ice. If you get ice in the bucket, throw out the ice. People have boiled it down. The sugar content is next to zero. So you can concentrate your sugar.
And there's a fourth benefit.
Oh, fourth.
If you don't have trees of your own to tap, it's really easy to gain permission if you're hanging buckets.
Yeah.
Your neighbors like to see it. The old nostalgic hanging a bucket on a tree.
Absolutely. I can't agree more on that because I only have the metal buckets, and I'll never go to plastic just because I know that people love them.
Oh, yeah.
They look nice.
I mean, some of these trees are in their yards, maybe right next to their entrance of their house. And they got to look at it when they walk in and out every day, and they want to have a smile on their face.
Yeah. I'm too snobby to hang those plastic bags.
Oh, I've never done it, never handled one. I don't know. I just imagine they're going to break. Like, I'm going to walk up to it one day and have a broken bag, and there goes a day's worth of sap, you know?
Yeah, and I used to, it's funny, when I worked at Frost Valley, I was scrounging for any plastic buckets, and I got, you know what was the best, was the imitation maple syrup buckets I used to use.
I've seen some of your pictures.
I know, but they were cool. We'll take a break and we'll talk more about backyard maple sugaring coming up next.
Love and maple syrup go together like the sticky winds of winter when they meet. When lonely lovers come to rest beneath the trees, they do the best, but still they can't be free. Looking for the world to be anything but what they see, longing to be understood by the heart that shapes the world. If you go into the forest and gaze up through the leaves and see the sky is almost white, you can learn to understand what makes the forest treat the man like a mother's only child. In the north, when winter's claw relaxes now to keep the law of nature in control, people come and stand in line to rob the forest of a wine, but they don't feel the cold. Looking for the world to be anything but what they see, longing to be understood by the heart that shapes the world. Love and maple syrup shine like embers warm, like thoughts divine, they tell us it is spring. Love and maple syrup stir the thoughts of people into words of songs that they can sing. Love and maple syrup go together like the sticky winds of winter when they meet. When lonely lovers come to rest beneath the trees, they do the best, but still they can't be free. Looking for the world to be
anything but what they see, longing to be understood by the heart that shapes the wood. Anything but what they see, longing to be understood by the heart that shapes the world.
All right. Well, leave it up to Gordon Lightfoot, a Canadian folk singer, to sing about maple syrup. You know?
Loving maple syrup.
That's right. This is From the Forest every Wednesday, 6 to 7 p.m. We talk about a different forest-related topic with Ryan and John. Tonight's topic is backyard maple sugaring. So, boiling this sap, John. Let's talk about boiling sap, and then how do you know when it's syrup?
Yeah.
So we can't talk about everything tonight, but we should probably cover this.
It's a very complex science of boiling water.
That's it. That's all it is, really.
I mean, it can be as complicated as you want it to be, right? You
know, yeah.
Some of these commercial systems are really intricate and cool, and if you want to learn about them, there's open houses out there to go see them and learn. But if you want to do it in the backyard, you literally just have to boil to evaporate water out of sap, and eventually you get the right concentration, and that is syrup.
Yeah.
That's as hard as it has to be. So you can do it on your stove. Don't recommend it. Right?
Because inside?
Inside on the stove, yeah. Because, you know, say we're average. You know, average maple, sugar maple is going to be around 2%. That's somewhere around the 40 to 1, 42 to 1. That's the buzzword you hear all the time.
Mm-hmm.
So you got to remove 40 gallons of water
out
of your house.
If you just came in your house and just threw 40 gallons on the ground
right
in the air, that'd be a lot of water.
So I hope you don't have wallpaper or something that's going to peel. So, yeah, don't do that. You could do it on a turkey fryer. But you'll have fun, a lot of fun making syrup, but you're going to spend a lot of money making it, so much so where you could have bought it much cheaper.
Yeah, don't use propane.
Propane's not good.
It's too expensive.
So you got to come up with something else. So it can be, you know, if you've got a backyard barbecue grill, maybe repurpose it.
Mm-hmm.
If you've got some fire bricks, you can build something up so you can just get a fire going underneath, get maybe some food service pans or
stainless steel
food service pans, or maybe find someone with an old flat pan that upgraded to, you know, something else, and they have it laying around their barn. There's a lot of old maple equipment out there that you can, if you ask hard enough, you'll find someone who has it and is willing to lend it.
I think you got to talk about the importance of having a flue.
Oh yeah.
And preheating.
Right. So if you have that backyard barbecue pit, I'm not talking about like the round ring where you have campfires. I mean like the legit pit where someone might go to smoke a pig on, that's got like a fire chimney. You need something. And whether that you just built something up, you can stick a chimney flue into it, and it'll create a draft on its own. It doesn't have to be sealed. Cinder blocks work great. It's not as good, but it does work. You have to get that smoke out of there. Can you produce some syrup over top of a flat pan on some fire underneath?
You'd be choking, man.
You're going to choke all night long. I can imagine just running in circles trying to get away from smoke. But also, it drafts over top of your pan and creates this cyclone effect over top of your pan all night.
Mm-hmm.
You end up with smoky flavored syrup.
Some people like that. It's pretty bitter, actually.
It's only okay at best, in my opinion.
If you could control how much smoke went over it, like to a very little amount, it might be good. But if it's happening for hours, I've seen it. I've done it. I've been there. It creates like creosote-flavored maple syrup.
Not good.
It's not good.
Probably not good for you either.
And you are choking on some serious smoke all day. I've done it, and it's not fun.
Yeah, so you got to get a flue somehow. And, like Ryan said, some cinder blocks with some stove pipe. Like I said, you don't have to seal it up tight. It will create its own draft and get it up above your head.
Yep.
Barrels work awesome. For about $100 investment, you can get a barrel stove kit. They sell them at a lot of hardware stores. Online, I'm sure you could find it easily. Cut some holes, to fit the kit. You can get a door in there and a chimney flue adapter. Get some stovepipe. Cut a hole on the top to fit whatever pan you're going to be putting in there, and boom, you've got an evaporator. Yeah. I boiled on one for 2 years straight, and it can peak out somewhere around 4 gallons of sap per hour.
Yeah, that's about right.
And you can produce 5 gallons of maple syrup on it in a season and not break your back doing it. You're not going to kill yourself and still have some time in the evenings to not be up all night.
That's all mine is a more adapted barrel. Yeah. A 2x3 pan, really, its roots are in being a barrel stove. They just cut, just made the arch, which is what holds the pan, a little bigger. And I bought mine. You can get it off Bascom's. There's this guy, it's from
Mason,
Bill Mason, out of Porter, Maine. And he sells them out of Bascom's catalog. And the arch is good. The pan is what you're paying for on his. The pan is such a heavy gauge stainless steel. That thing is built like a tank. Hmm. Highly recommend it. But I bought mine for 750 bones.
Brand
back new. In 2007, and now I don't know what they are, 12, 14?
There was something like that last year. I would imagine they're more than that this year.
Yeah.
Materials have just skyrocketed.
That'll do 5 to 8 gallons per hour. Uh-oh. Now, you load it with fire brick so that reflects the heat. It's a little more efficient.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, but you're not choking on smoke, and it's got vents, a false bottom, so that you get more oxygen. Some people get really crazy, and they'll hook a blower on it to increase oxygen. You can get crazy if you want, but there's all sorts of things you can do. But as John says, you're taking 2% sap and you're increasing it by boiling water away to 67%. So how do you know when you have maple syrup, John, on a backyard scale?
There's a few ways to do it. The most simple at the backyard scale is using stuff you probably already have in the kitchen. And that's a candy thermometer, or you can use a meat thermometer. It does work.
Yeah.
As long as it's got a digital readout, or I'm talking the meat thermometer, digital readout up to at least 220 degrees. I've seen some that peak out at whatever medium or well done is, right?
Okay.
So anyway, syrup is going to be 7.5 degrees above the boiling temperature of water at your elevation on that day. That's going to change. Barometric pressure changes it. So low pressure, it's going to go down. High pressure system comes through. Bluebird, sunny skies like we had this afternoon. Your boiling temperature is going to increase every time. Your elevation, if you go up at, I boil at 1,650 feet. Ryan boils at
860.
So, we've got almost 700 feet difference between us. I'm sure we have a degree or two difference that we finish syrup on.
Use the same thermometer
that you boil the water on. Right. So all I do every day is when I finish my syrup, I have a little hot pan, or I do it right on the stove in the house. Boil water, measure it, add 7.5 degrees. That's going to be syrup. Ryan goes a little higher.
I go higher. So I use my thermometer. And also, the reason why we're using thermometers is because you can do a hydrometer and you have to fill up a cup. But this is backyard. We don't have enough syrup to sometimes do that, to fill up the cup.
Right.
So when you get it close, you take off a little bit. I have a draw-off valve. I can do that. Or if you're doing a single batch method, you take the whole pan off and then you finish it up inside. All right. So when you're boiling your water, measure at the same depth in that water that you would for your syrup. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
Wherever that is, just be consistent. So I do it where I can hear the thermometer hit the bottom of the pot, and then I lift up slightly. That's it. That's what I do. All right. So I go 8.5 degrees over. Now, what happens if you go 9 or 10? What'll happen is at some point you get crystallization.
Right.
And it doesn't harm the syrup. You're just going to get crystals in the bottom. It's not a big deal. And then it'll be syrup throughout the bottle. I don't get any crystallization going 8.5 on my thermometer. Now, maybe you will. But I like it as thick as possible before it crystallizes. That's the way I like syrup.
Last season I went 8 just because we're not using high-tech equipment, especially if it's an old candy thermometer. It's not going to be precise to 0.5 degree. So I make sure I go 0.5 degree over that 7.5.
So you go 8?
I've been going 8, yeah.
Eight's probably probably great.
Just because there's variation in thermometers, and I don't want to be under. You can be over and be great and be fine. Under is where you get some mold problems, even though, even if that happens, it's not a big deal.
Nope.
You just scrape the mold off, reboil, and it's back to sanitary. You can eat it again. It's food grade again. But I don't want to have to do that. I want to open my jar and have usable syrup right there. So I go a little over, and you're not going
to
have problems.
I used to have mold. You'd open it up, and there'd be one or two floating around. It does not affect the taste, but ever since I go 8.5, no crystals. There'll be like little specks of where it's beginning to crystal at the bottom. Mm-hmm. And some of that's just sugar sand or whatever they call it. But very little because it gets filtered. But I just like 8.5. It just, it's the right texture. It's the right thickness. Sometimes I question it. Maybe I should go 8. There's like the other day, it was taking forever to get up to temperature. Man, it's pissing me off.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. I was almost going to go 8, and I was like, oh, come on. It gets faster and faster, by the way. So this is the other mistake people make is they walk away from syrup. Don't walk away from syrup unless you really know you're experiencing that, what's going on. Because what will happen is, it's like tomato sauce. It'll just boil up over, and you'll lose everything.
Yeah.
I've had it happen. It really sucks. Really bad feeling.
Right. And then it burns everything.
So what's going to happen is as you get it on the pot, you got to turn down the heat gradually And then what's happening, so say your boiling point at 8.5 over the boiling point of water is 222. Like mine the other day was like 220.4, you know?
Wow.
So it'll take forever to get 217, 218, then it gets faster and faster until finally it goes from 219 to 221. You're like, okay.
It's done.
But you got to be there.
Yeah.
You know, you have to be there while this is happening. So you can't just walk away from it. It's not a good idea. Then you filter, you put it through felt, which is, or some kind of filter sock, or it can be a flat filter. You can drape a flat filter over stainless steel pot with clothespins. Totally works. Do it that way. I have a sock filter that's made from the same material that you buy from Maple equipment dealers. And usually it's still up to temperature when I'm putting it in there. I check it, make sure it's at least... I'll be honest with you, I only do it at really 190. I don't even like getting it to 180 anymore. 190 to 200 is what I want.
Sure.
At least.
The only thing you're risking going higher is darkening. So the commercial guys care about it because maybe they have a market for only medium syrup.
Right.
Right? And if they go to dark, it got darker, they lost their market. So we don't care. Yeah, we're backyarders. We want sanitary product.
Yeah.
More than anything.
Yeah, and I put it in glass and... I don't want anything floating around in there, nothing. You know, a lot of the commercial guys, they're in plastic anymore anyway.
Most of them, yeah.
And I like seeing it. I also like, I don't know, you know what it is? There's very few things I like in plastic at all. You know, isn't that weird? You wouldn't think it would change the texture of what you're drinking, but you know it does. You ever have a beer out of a plastic cup?
It's always better in glass.
I mean, that's for people. That's for college kids playing Pong or beer pong or whatever.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah, sure. Frozen glass mug is the best, man.
You know, Jack Daniels on ice in a red Solo cup. I've done it in a pinch. But if you had to choose, you put it in a glass, man.
I get it.
So, I don't know. I like it. I still like it in a ball jar.
Yeah, that's what I use.
They're usually good. Once in a while, you get a bad one. It cracks. That had happened. That really sucks.
Really?
Oh, yeah.
I've never cracked a syrup jar.
Oh, yeah, I have.
Oof.
Yep. You got to be careful, too, because you can really mess your hands up.
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah, no, it does happen. It's the worst feeling in the world, watching a quart of maple syrup spill out. Can't find quart jars right now. What the heck?
I'll check that place that I got you yours last year. You were having problems last year. I found a spot.
If you see one. I got cash in the truck. Well, shouldn't say that, but yeah. I got cash ready to go for it for that purpose.
I'll just get it if I see it, and I'll give it to you. But I remember this happened last year. You couldn't find ball jars in syrup season. So I didn't remember, but my wife did. I remember like a month and a half ago, she got ball jars. I was like, what is this for? She's like, it's syrup season. It's coming up.
What the heck? I mean, I don't understand it. You'd think it would be... In the summer, it'd be from people doing vegetables and stuff.
I wonder if there's like another market for these companies that are making the jars, that they ramp it up during you know, pickling season in the fall, right?
Yeah.
Canning season, and they switched to some other product that's hot right now.
I guess.
I wonder. That has to, you know, these factories they're smart.
I guess so, but I don't know. There's off-brand lids out there too. I mean, right now I have enough from last year, but
oh, you don't want anything off-brand? Or?
No, because I've had cracked jars, and it really makes me angry. Beer. So now I'll go with Mason. But that's all the time we have in From the Forest, and see you next week. We'll be talking to a Catskill Forest Association landowner about deer and deer hunting and some of the wildlife management he's done on his property.
Excellent.
All right, take care.
Oh, the neon lights were flashing and the icy wind did blow. The water seeped into his shoes and the drizzle turned to snow. His eyes were red, his hopes were dead, and the wine was running low. And the old man came home from the forest. His tears fell on the sidewalk as he stumbled in the street. A dozen faces stopped to stare, but no one stopped to speak. For his castle was a hallway, and the bottle was his friend. And the old man stumbled in from the forest. Up a dark and dingy staircase, the old man made his way. His ragged coat around him as upon his cot he lay. And he wondered how it happened that he ended up this way. Getting lost like a fool in the forest. And as he lay there sleeping, a vision did appear. Upon his mantle shining, the face of one so dear, who'd loved him in the springtime of a long-forgotten year, when the wildflowers did bloom in the forest. She touched his grizzled fingers and she called him by his name. And then he heard the joyful sound of children at their games. In an old house on a hillside in some forgotten town.